mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 378. I'm Adam, and I haven't got a quote because I've been too busy, and nor has Debbie Melrose.
After you've arrested the personnel, impound the machine.
You had me going on there, didn't you, Debbie? Right, point deducted for pretending you didn't have a quote. I haven't got the window open yet for that. I'll have to deduct the point later. Andy Nunny.
Meanie.
Extraordinary, the Roussillon. I could have sworn it fell on me.
And Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Vaporization without representation is against the Constitution.
Mary Lang.
Long, long ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Wait. Yeah, right.
Oh, yes, I see what you mean now, yes. And Matthew Kressel.
Do you mind? This is a non-smoking compartment.
Yes, so this week we're going to be looking at the Deadly Assassin. I've had a very stressful time trying to get everything ready. So much so that I was convinced I had the quiz. But I haven't. So there isn't one.
Oh,
yay!
I'm betting on Matthew to win it.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I thought that I was bound to have some previous quiz notes, but I would never have had time to do a quiz this week. I've been away. I only managed to watch this whole story on Saturday morning, and I didn't have time to rewatch it to do the quiz. So I've been busy catching up. I've got four weddings on SD cards that need editing. So I'm a bit
any
behind.
Funerals, Adam?
I was going to say that.
I did a funeral last year, but it's not a regular occurrence doing funerals, but they do crop up from time to time. Right, so...
I think he missed the reference.
Yes, I did not bloody miss the reference. Oh, by the way, it's Debbie. Where do we go? I'm sure we had to do this, didn't we? For pretending that she didn't have a quote to make me feel good.
And then she ran the last quiz, second. So it doesn't matter.
Find one, and you were like, yeah, yeah.
No, you don't get around that one. You said you didn't have a quote. I thought, oh, good, that makes me... Because I said I didn't have a quote. You said, oh, I haven't got a quote. I thought, oh, good, that's me.
And then I looked one up.
Pardon?
I looked one up.
Yeah, we're talking about quotes. Right, now I just need to get my... I've rather stupidly, because I'm in a right flap, opened up the quiz score window. So, well, you don't get a point deducted, Debbie, because you're in the bloody quiz. Although we could have a point situation with behaviour throughout the show, couldn't we?
Yeah, you could pull out the
we could do that. That's a good
Trivial
idea.
Pursuit cards.
Yeah, that's a good idea, Kirby. Right.
Oh,
nice one. Oh, yeah.
And I was looking forward to winning by default.
Yeah.
You may win anyway.
Yeah, we just nominate Matthew as the winner. No, doesn't matter what the quiz is.
Yeah, it's rather weird, but my scores thingy's disappeared.
Point deducted then.
No, the file that I've got the scores on has vanished. It's not on my saved files. Let's try open recent. Recent? God, I'm not like recent. That chap off Big Bang Theory. Recent. Oh, everything's going wrong. I can work out a way around that later. I don't know what's happened to that. That's really weird. Things don't normally disappear from a cloud save situation. Right, so everybody, how are we?
I'm doing
pretty
okay.
Good.
That's right. Okay, shut up. Right. Let's get on with the story. Episode one begins with a title sequence. And by the way, this DVD's got a damaged area, which is going to skip over. So I don't know what happens in that damaged part of the DVD.
Long, long ago in a galaxy.
Here's a question. Is this the only classic era series that has no companions?
Yes.
Yes.
So what's the next one, then, in the new era that has no companions?
It's one of the Christmas specials, I believe. I can't remember which one. That would be the one where...
The one on Christmas Carol.
The new Doctor, is it? I can't remember.
Yeah.
The next Doctor,
Doctor, that's the one, yeah.
And I was wondering, actually, what if people knew that. And it's been what... I think it's been that the... Obviously, Deadly Assassin, the next Doctor, then there's the one which is just Capaldi on his own. I think they're the only three that have no companions in. I can't. I'm trying to think. Are there any others?
Yeah, David Tennant did one about going to the, what is it called, the Midnight Sun or something like that was the planet.
Well,
where he was in
yeah,
the...
Yeah, well, Donna Noble still... Yeah, Donna's still in the top and tail of that as well,
okay,
so...
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, she was in it. So she,
but the actual adventure
really
went on without her.
Right.
Right.
And what about the one in Mars?
Yeah,
Waters
of Mars.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I didn't think of that
Mars.
One. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they try to count. They try to count the leader of the Mars. Bowie station as a companion, but she is.
No, that doesn't count.
She wasn't there, was she?
Does D'Souza count as a as a companion?
Depends on whose list you're looking at.
She's not on my list, Matthew. It doesn't count.
Oh.
Anyway, I'm trying to log into my Microsoft doodah where my score file resides. Fascinating for the listeners and the viewers, of course, but this is the sort of things I have to try and juggle while doing the show. Hurrah!
How many viewers have we got?
Six mad people.
Wow.
I mean mad in a nice way, obviously.
Alan's got to be one, hasn't he?
No, he hasn't.
Obviously Lillian's one.
No, he isn't.
Who else?
She isn't.
Who else is?
And Laurie Nix.
No, she isn't.
Oh, yeah.
So if they were watching, they would have posted. Oh,
they did. Nix says hi.
Yeah.
Oh, right, in that case, we have John Davey. Hey there, I'll try not to crash it again, because John has a tendency of crashing the live feed. Don't know how he does it, but it's quite a knack he has. And he's promised to take me out for a drink when he reaches the Isle of Wight at the end. Well, towards it, he said he's very mad. So mad that he's promised, hand on heart, to take me out for a drink when he gets to the Isle of Wight. Debbie wasn't included in that particular conversation, but indeed. Beg your pardon, Deb?
Fair enough.
Right then, so I've got the scorecard up and running, although I've not given anybody any jokers. Right, there we go. Right, we're up and running. And Debbie's minus one, isn't she? So minus one. And Kirby, surprise, surprise, doesn't that very often? He's on one. Right, the episode starts with some text scrolling up the screen, and and Tom Baker doing his best Little Britain sort of voiceover. The only bit he forgot to say was Britain. The Americans that went right over the Americans' head because they don't know what a Little Britain is.
I do.
I know what Little Britain is. Thank you very much.
I've got season one on DVD.
Jason Chuang says, hey, will you all be doing a podcast next weekend for Conquistadors? No, Jason, I've got other things to do next weekend, so no, I will not be doing anything for Conquistadors.
Yes, we will.
Shut up, Kirby. Ruined it. Right, point deduct for Kirby. I can't find my folder. I'll deduct that later. And John Davey says,
to be fair, we announced the episode a week ago at the con, when we put up the con schedule, so...
Exactly.
Yes. And the other thing John Davies says is congratulations on the amazing new guests. We'll talk about them later, but if you're a particular fan of the American Pie series, you'd be particularly excited about turning up. And, of course, Brian O'Halloran's coming back. Woohoo!
It's a live show, isn't it? Yeah.
So Debbie will obviously resume her friendship with Mr. O'Halloran.
Yay!
And his little sidekick, which is also at the... Who is also
I'm so
club.
Happy.
And of course, John Davey is coming to the.
Oh, it's going to be absolutely fantastic. Our little con is just going nuts with stars now.
Trouble
isn't
is,
it?
If it's going to get bigger, I don't know how much bigger it's going to get from this time on. Lillian Robin says, I can't make it to the con, so I'm looking forward to the podcast. We're not doing anything live, but we'll be Deb will be recording stuff, unlike Kirby when he turns up at conventions. And. Hang on, she's talking about Conkay. And then John Davies says yay, because he's talking about buy me a drink. And he's just saying yay, getting Andrew a drink. It's quite an honour.
Why can't you do a podcast at the Isle of Wight convention?
I'm too busy. I can't eat on the Saturday. I've got a wedding to do, so I can't be there very often on the Saturday. My whole full day is a Sunday. I might be there on Friday to do some prepping, but unfortunately, they decided to pick a date. I already had a wedding booked, so I shall be... not there very often, sadly. I can't say to a couple, sorry, I can't do your wedding because I want to go to the Isle of Wight Comic Con although I really, really was tempted to say this. Anyway, some words went up the screen, and we had that bloke off Little Britain, and then we see a little clip of through the Doctor's mind's eye. Is that right? Mind's eye?
Yes.
Mind's eye, yes.
Of the President getting assassinated. And it looks like the Doctor's done it. And the TARDIS materialises, and we get a little sort of banter between some Gallifreyan guards. And this is the first time we see this more traditional Gallifreyan uniform that we see this for a bit more often after. What? Master.
This is the first time we've seen a lot of standard Time Lord stuff.
Oh, yes.
This
is fantastic.
Yes.
It's brilliant, isn't it? I just love it.
So, yeah, we get a bit of banter about the TARDIS being old and clapped out, essentially. Didn't say those words, but that's what they're implying. And
should be in a museum.
Yeah. It belongs in a museum.
Yep. Well, yeah, that's what I've just implied. Anyway, the Doctor keeps having these little flashbacks to the President getting shot. He's not at this stage, even though he looks like he's done it through his mind's eye, he's not convinced that he's done it. He thinks he's just had a premonition of the assassination. Jason Truong said, Adam, what kind of dogs do you have behind you? Well, they're fluffy ones. One of them's actually not a dog, he's a mini Garm, and he's been throwing up all day. So we might actually get some live dog vomit on the show. If
lovely.
Yeah, not been very well today. So back to the episode. What did he write on that note? He wrote a note on the TARDIS console. What did he write on it?
It's Gallifreyan writing.
Oh, is it? Okay. And then he packed his little sort of doctor's bag with a load of gubbins, including... these things would have been in the quiz if I'd realised I hadn't written one. including a sonic screwdriver.
I think stuff. I mentioned last time we recorded that we had not done this story before.
Well, I think we have done. I'm sure I've talked about this story before.
Maybe. Nope, when Kirby did his spreadsheet a while back of things that we hadn't done, this was one that had never been done before, shockingly.
I'm sure I've talked about it at least before, but never mind.
If you had, it was just in passing and didn't make it to the podcast descriptions that I used as my reference.
Anyway, I think the Doctor manages to sneak out of the TARDIS console while the Time Lord guards come in. And then
that console room is enormous, isn't it? And you think it's tiny because you see the wooden console flip down thing, but actually, he just sneaked past them. How big was that console room?
I'm thinking he probably sneaked out through the other console room door further up the corridor. Possibly, I don't know.
He's got out of that console room to the corridor, though, hasn't he?
I don't know. But Alan T. Butcher said, oh no, Garm's struck down with Lasers disease. Senissa. Right, so the Doctor goes on a bit of a run around the capital, and we meet is it Englin and who was the other bloke? And thank you,
Mandrill.
That's right, and of course Goth as well. Who, considering he's called Goth, he wasn't wearing a lot of black clothes in those until we get to the.
Well, that's why Lillian wants us to wear black. Hadn't you worked that one out?
Right, for Lillian, I'm going to do this. That's not for you, Andy. That's for Lillian. No, Andy, not for you. So I'm going to paraphrase through these bits. Yeah, so Goth at the beginning has got a bit of a sort of silver sheen to his face. I don't know, maybe sort of
gold. Yeah, he does. It's kind of strange
silver paint. And the Doctor then sneaks back into his TARDIS and watches the news.
Runcible the Fatuous.
Pardon?
Runcible the Fatuous.
Runcible, that's it.
Yes.
Lillian Robin said, no, Goth's ceremonial lipstick isn't black.
Nice.
Well, not being aware of lipstick that often, I wouldn't really know these things.
Yeah, right, Andy. Right, so then we meet Barusa. For the first time. First to start with this incarnation.
How many times is Barusa in episodes?
This is the first time.
Yeah.
Because he's also an Invasion of Time, Ark of Infinity, and the Five Doctors.
Isn't it the same?
He's forward in total, isn't it?
Isn't it the same actor when he does Invasion of Time? I can't remember.
Nope. No, they isn't. Okay. Recast the role every single time he came back.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Anyway, so the Doctor's sort of TARDIS is sort of moved.
Transducted.
That's the word. And we then meet the Master's looked a bit better, shall we say.
Yeah, we actually know he's the Master at that point? I don't think we do.
No, we don't at this point, I don't think.
You will when you get to the credits, because it's how he's credited in the credits.
Yeah, at the end of the episode.
Because I can tell you, I think it's only episode three in the dream sequence in The Matrix when the Doctor realises who he's facing against, isn't he?
No, it's in episode two.
Yeah, I was going to say, he realised...
Oh, yeah, you're right, it's in episode two. Yeah, you're right, it's in episode two, isn't it?
Quite a bit in episode two.
You're right, he's credited as a Master, but the Doctor does not recognise him as a Master until then.
He doesn't see him, though, until then, surely.
He doesn't even see him, so he wouldn't know. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, right, so then a couple of the Time Lords are getting themselves ready for the big bash, and the Doctor sneaks into their...
What, they're playing 20-20 cricket?
The Doctor sneaks into their dressing room and nicks one of their outfits. Meanwhile, the cameraman gets done in, and... And the Doctor then dons what is now a traditional Time Lord garb. With the seal of Rassilon in full view on its little thing, where only a couple of years before that was a completely different logo for a completely different civilization.
Presumably, he must have nicked a rogue from the same chapter he's a member of. Otherwise, Runcible would have recognised, said, "You know, hang on a minute, why are you wearing a rogue of a different chapter to that which you're a member of?"
Mm. Right.
Are you being pedantic, Andy?
No.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
Yes, he is.
Kirby, are you going to tell him off for nicking your job?
I think Kirby kind of checked out for a while.
So, at the end of episode one, the Doctor is sort of watching the what he saw in his mind's eye sort of unfold, and then suddenly it looks like he feels the urge to grab the gun and shoot the president.
Yeah. Best cliffhanger ever.
Do you say best?
It's one of the best.
Oh, it's probably not the best. The best one, in my view, the ever one, is the when the tenth Doctor, is it, regenerates and then siphons off the regenerative stuff into a hand. That, for me, is the best ever.
That one's great on first viewing, but it's kind of like you get to the actual resolution of it, and it's kind of like, really?
Oh, it's a typical Doctor Who cliffhanger resolution. It's still the best.
Viewing, the same thing.
That's where we were thinking. I really wanted to see next week's episode after that one. I was extremely eager for a whole week, thinking, how the hell are they going to get out of this one? It was so good. I was actually thinking, oh, they've done something really good here. They're actually going to regenerate the Doctor, and everybody was trying to surmise as to who it was going to be next. You know, somebody said it was going to be. A woman.
Never be a woman.
Anyway, so it looks like the Doctor has murdered the president. Although why he didn't regenerate, I don't quite understand. But there you go. Maybe he was on his last one.
Yeah, that's
a few
good
Time
question.
Lords get done in and don't regenerate in this story. Beg your pardon?
Yep. But that's why the assassin is deadly.
Very good.
Very good.
Okay, point for Matthew. That's going. Matthew, 1 point. Very good. I'm impressed with that one. right. So I think the Doctor is then arrested for the murder and then interrogated by, is it Englund or the other chap? I can't remember. The one with the accent. Which one was the one with the accent?
Oh, it's that crap.
No, I don't think it was that. No, okay, fine. anyway,
it's Barusa, isn't it?
No, Barusa doesn't interrogate him.
No.
The head of the Chancellery Guard, but I can't think of what the actual character's name is.
George Prado.
Thank you.
Who?
Hildred,
yes.
What, must he live?
Hildred.
No.
Hildred.
It's Hildred. It's Hildred, not Hildred.
It's Hildred, yeah. Right. Hildred, Somerset.
Must live.
Thank you. Debbie. All right, there we get a point for that one. So she's back up to zero. Right, anyway, so it's an interesting thing of, I think, the Master viewing the Doctor's interrogation via his little Apple Watch, although there's a strange backdrop on it. Or is the bloke replaying the video? I don't know. I think he's replaying it, actually. I take it all back. I thought that was a Master's hand, but it's not. And then... feel better after that cough, Andy?
Yeah.
So yeah, the Doctor, they're all convinced the Doctor's done it, although it's pretty good evidence to prove that he did. So the Doctor's going to be, what was the word they used? It wasn't dispersed, was it?
Vaporized.
That was my quote.
But he gets out of it by deciding he's going to run for president.
Article 17.
Yes.
Yep.
That would have been a
Matthew,
question.
Matthew, you win the quiz. We already know that.
Yeah. We all get double points then, don't we?
So then they start the investigation as to, basically the Doctor proving that it couldn't be him. And then, of course, when we see the little miniaturised character in the gun sight, whatever it is.
It was a camera.
It
was the cameraman.
It looks like an action man. You notice that?
It is an action man, according to the info text.
Yes.
The Doctor then knows who's responsible for the whole thing.
The Master.
So he teams up with the two old chaps and decides what he's going to do is go into the Matrix. And inside the Matrix, he's nearly done in a couple of times.
Several times.
Several times.
And with some very strange... stuff going on. And then this gets his foot trapped in a... Hang on, he gets his foot trapped in a rail on the railway line, and it shows a lot of teeth just before the sting.
No, I've been there, because that's where they film that. He's about 10 miles up the road from where I live.
Did you get your foot trapped in the rail?
Andy?
No, I didn't, because the railway's now gone.
Oh, okay.
It's a disused quarry.
The
quarry closed. When they closed,
it's unusual.
The railway away.
Andy, yes, it's been filled in, but you can see that train at the Amberley Museum and Heritage Center. Southdowns National Park, wherever that is.
Oh, right, that will be for us about 30 miles south, because we live on the North Downs. South Downs about 30 miles away. Oh, right, I'll look into that then, Kirby.
It's near Arundel in West Sussex.
Yeah, that's about 20, 30 miles away from us then. Right,
but the very same train is there on display.
Right, in that case, I will go and get some pictures for you.
Good.
And on this week's 20 Megabyte Vacation Podcast.
we're actually planning our holiday at the moment. Before we had Stormageddon, we did Australia, America, and New Zealand and Canada. Since then, we've done Devon and Cornwall.
Right then, point deducted for Andy.
Why?
And a point deducted for Kirby for boring the hell out of me for the last 2 minutes.
I just posted a link to the museum in the comment thread.
Right, I'll have a look.
Joy. Anyway, especially for the viewers, here's my Peter Capaldi impression.
Well, all six of them.
Actually, it looks a bit more like a Russian... Yeah, Peter Capaldi. I'm going to be Peter Capaldi for the sake of the viewers. I'm going to tuck it a bit further up my head. There we go. I have to balance it for a bit. I've got HB nose as well. That's terrible. Okay, what we had come through on the feed. Ian Kirk says his script. Shall I read his script out? Because he actually put it here. That might be saving some
of the audio.
No,
let Matthew read it.
And then Laurie Nick says, dang it, I'm at a location where it's very loud. Hey? And I forgot my earbuds. So I can only watch and imagine by Adam's expression what everybody is saying. Luckily, I can read lips. All right. Kirby, that's 1 point deducted. Anyway, right, let's move on.
Lillian also said something.
Did she? Sorry, Lillian. What did Lillian say? Tom Baker, in the making of documentary, said he loved wearing robes as he... always wanted to wear a frock. Oh, my wig just fell off. It's actually a microphone diffuser, by the way, but it does actually double up very nicely as a Peter Capaldi thing. Let's see. Good, isn't it? No? Okay, fine. The dog's impressed. So, at the beginning
looks
of episode...
Looks more like a tribble.
Thank you. Oh, tribbles are around. Yeah, so at the beginning of episode three, we see a lot of very sort of surreal stuff going on inside the Matrix. And...
it was driving Mary Whitehouse crazy.
Not at this point. That was the end of episode three that drove her crazy.
Well, everything. She
everything's driving her crazy in this story.
Oh, it's nice to think she was watching.
She was on
it,
the. They even interviewed her about this on the making of documentary.
Did they?
Yeah.
I just bashed my microphone. Sorry, listeners. Right. So yeah, some really weird stuff going on, and clowns and planes, and then eventually a strange man turns up, and the doctor sort of says, like, who are you, and we get to see, surprise, it's Goth. Goth is in the
Godzilla Black!
What?
Which we could figure out all along, because we could see right through that little filmy thing.
That's right, and his voice is his voice is so distinctive, you expect him to start quoting Jonathan Swift any second.
So, yeah, so then now the Doctor has a one-to-one battle with Goth, and he sort of comes out of it, of the Matrix machine, quite a bad way, really. But the Master's not very happy with him, if I remember rightly. He's quite cross with Goth. And something's come through. Laurie Nick says, "What's that on your head? New puppy." No, it's my Peter Capaldi. Somebody tell her it's my Peter Capaldi wig.
Remember, she can't hear you.
It could be a set of eyebrows, I suppose. That's sort of more like the Liam and Noel Gallagher look, but without, obviously it'd take my glasses off. That's gone right over the Americans' head. They don't know who Liam and Noel Gallagher is, but never mind, let's move on. What?
It's plural, the two of them.
He's being pedantic. They're Gallaghers.
Yeah, so at the end of episode three, we have to talk about this. Goth tries to drown the Doctor and they do a freeze frame. And Mary Whitehouse thought that the Doctor was literally underwater for 7 days, because that was the gap, obviously, in between the episodes. And thought that children might find that a little bit shocking, to think someone could stay underwater for that long. He is a Time Lord.
The woman had some very strange ideas.
She did. She must have had a terrible childhood herself, and scary things that would have upset her. Yeah, so the Master's not very happy with Goth. And, of course, when the Doctor eventually comes out victorious from the Matrix, he quickly runs to the Goth, who's bloody crying. He's been to the dentist.
Is that a story?
Only one Goth?
Shut up. He's been to the dentist, and he can't talk properly. And the Doctor, like you said, like a typical politician, he asks him a straight question, who's behind it all. I think that's what it was, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, who's behind all? But he asks him about three or four times. He never gives him the answer before he snuffs it. He could regenerate, I suppose. Time Lord, didn't he? Don't quite understand why he didn't, but there you go.
Yeah, why?
Tell me, Kirby, why didn't he regenerate?
I don't know. Why did a lot of the people in this, the guard who was killed in the beginning episode didn't regenerate, as far as we know?
Yeah, no, he didn't.
Because guards aren't actually Time Lords.
Yeah, I was going to say it. And I think
I don't think that works.
A different class of people that live in Gallifrey.
But a lot of the Time Lords died and they didn't regenerate.
We see them again with Peter Capaldi's Doctor, isn't it? They're not Time Lords, the ones he's...
Right.
But
to be fair, the President gets shot. Everybody who doesn't regenerate usually gets shot with a taser, or in the case of Goth, ends up getting his brain fried, basically, by this machine he's hooked up to when the Master decides he's going to blow up the Matrix.
Yeah.
Right. So it's and they also comment that they use that when the Doctor is in there, and that he's using a lot of Artron energy, which, going by what's in the mythology later, is we know the Artron energy is important to regeneration. So maybe he doesn't have enough Artron energy to regenerate. But never mind me. I am nerd. Hear me bore.
This is also the first time the Artron energy has ever been mentioned.
This is the first time everything gets mentioned.
I know.
The strange at the moment, the planet's called Gallifrey, and it becomes Gallifrey later on.
We learned during the 10th Doctor's, no, I'm sorry, the 11th Doctor's time, that if a Time Lord is killed too quickly, they can't regenerate. They don't have the time to regenerate.
That's true.
Which is why River Song came out of that lake and shot him, because that was supposed to happen so fast.
that he would not be able to regenerate.
That's only in relation to the script, of course. If it happened to the Doctor, there wouldn't be any problem whatsoever.
Right. Well,
every Doctor we've seen, you know, drags around for a long time saying goodbye and whatever and goes back to the TARDIS, and that's where they regenerate.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, that was even established earlier than that, Mary, in Turn Left, when they explain why the Doctor died in that story. And it's like, he got killed too quickly and couldn't regenerate. So.
They shot him while he was regenerating, apparently.
Matthew's always right.
I'm not always right.
Wow. Yes, you are. That's why you win the quiz.
Mm. Yeah. Lillian Robbins says, that's right, Horsall played Gulliver in The Mind Robber. And then Ian Kirk said, Laurie Nix, it's a microphone wind diffuser on his head. 12th Doctor wig. Thank you for clearing that
one. Yeah, the other interesting thing about Bernard Horsall... Oh, sorry.
Pardon?
Yeah. I was trying to say something, but you were talking, and I was trying not to interrupt you and lose points.
It's called anchoring, Matthew, just point out.
As you do.
But the other interesting thing about Bernard Horsfall, of course, is that this is actually the second time he's played a Time Lord, because he's one of the members of the Second Doctor Tribunal at the end of the War
Games. Of course, he was playing the same character, wasn't he?
Possibly.
That's the theory, yeah.
Be good if he was, wouldn't it?
It would. It works.
Yeah.
In my mind canon, he's playing the same character.
Okay, Kerry. Of course, your mind canon is right on this planet, isn't it? Right, where are you going? So now they know it's the Master. They go. The Master wants the sash of Rassilon, and what was the other of Rassilon? He wants the Rassilon of Rassilon.
The key of Rassilon.
That's it. So as he can have complete control of the Matrix and regenerate him, he can regenerate himself and blah de blah de blah de blah. But of course, something goes wrong, doesn't it? The Doctor.
When you go to the grocery on Gallifrey, do you get to buy the toilet paper of Rassilon?
Or the tea towel of Rassilon?
Anyway, how does I've lost the plot now. So how does the Doctor defeat the Master in this particular battle that they had? They had a bit of a scrap, didn't they, in the sort of big Panopticon Hall thingamajig.
Panopticon, yes. Yeah.
So how did he defeat the Master? Because he apparently went, and then he turns
Master
up.
Master falls down a deep chasm, and the Doctor rehooks everything back up to the Star of Rassilon.
Oh, the Star of Rassilon.
Just in time.
At this point, the Eye of Harmony is a completely different thing to what it is later on in Doctor Who. It was quite interesting.
And it's been different things several times.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's this grandfather clock which turns up, which suspiciously is the Master's TARDIS. And we don't get to see that again for several years. And it's a different clock when we see it again. So that's essentially the Deadly Assassin. As we haven't reviewed this before, apparently, I'll just say what I think of it. I think it's quite a good little tale. Characterizations are very good. It's a fascinating view of Gallifrey. I do get rather irritated by it. There are Time Lords that die in this and don't regenerate. They could have had at least one of them regenerate just for the sake of it, because you would expect them to. But no, they all die. But I accept Matthew's point of it being a deadly assassin. But some of them don't die at the hand of the Master, who is the assassin, I think. Oh, no, it's Goth, isn't it?
Goth
under control by the Master. Oh, whatever. Anyway, somebody should have regenerated somewhere along the line just to keep it Time Lordy.
To be fair, we hadn't really come to expect, regenerations from Time Lords left, right, and center yet. So
I would expect a time. We've had it in the Planet of Spiders. What's his name? Riposhe, whatever his name is. Campo Riposhe, that's it. He gets shot and he dies and regenerates.
So yeah, he's the only Time Lord other than the Doctor we've seen regenerate.
Yeah, so far. We do see the Master
up
regenerate.
Up to this point, yeah.
And we see River Song and a few other people. But
that's years and decades in the future, though, Adam.
Yeah, but at this point, we have seen a Time Lord other than the Doctor regenerate, Campo Riposhe. So you would expect on Gallifrey, where Time Lords are getting killed left, right, and centre, that at least one of them would regenerate.
Yeah, it happens every day.
So, but as a whole, it's a really, really good story. It obviously stands on its own because it's the only classic story that doesn't feature a companion. Tom Baker is in his element with this, and I love the fact that Mary Whitehouse is up in arms about, you know, the sort of very graphic scenes in it, because that meant it was really, really good, and they've done a good job in making an almost adult piece of drama. So
it did feel grown up, didn't it?
Yeah.
More grown
up. Yeah.
It's a very, very good story. It's not the best Tom Baker story, because I do like a doctor to have a companion, but it is very good, very entertaining, and good fun. So I'd always give it a thumbs up. It's one of the best. What did you think about it, Andy?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, I really did. I think it's, you're right, it's not the classic. I mean, the classics are things like Thomas of Wenchai and Heroes of Mars. But the
it
fact
is a
that
classic.
He took it, because it is no companion, he had to take the whole show by himself, in a way. And I think he did that so well. I mean, you know, we're fortunate we've not got yet into the Tom Baker comedy half hour, which is what it turned into, unfortunately. But, the storyline, it flows really, really well. Excuse me. I mean, my notes are very skimpy, simply because I didn't need to make notes. The story's going and keeping moving. You can see what's going to happen. I think it's fairly obvious early on that Goth was going to be the villain. And when you realise who the master was, again, it made a lot of sense. But it didn't spoil it, the fact you knew it, because you could wait and see what was going to happen, what's going to develop. And the way that, although the Doctor saved the day at the end of it, he was still going to be the villain because they wanted rid of him very, very quickly. Because he said, look, we can't keep you around. You know, you have basically destroyed a whole piece of ceremony. And, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I watched it on... because I haven't got a DVD. And I watched it in one fell swoop, loved it. It's an absolute cracker.
It is indeed. So, before I move on to Kirby, Debbie, have you seen this before? This
story? No, I haven't.
Oh, well, that's interesting then. Kirby, what did you think?
I absolutely love this story.
Well, don't mock the microphone over it. It's only a good enough to give a comment, for God's sake. Carry on.
I remember seeing that this is one of the ones that back when I first started watching Doctor Who in the student center at college. This is one of the ones that I was just so excited to find out more about the Time Lords. And I saw this in over four days. So the cliffhangers were truly cliffhangers to me. And it's quite exciting. Just love it. Can't say much more.
Sorry, just digging out more questions. All right, we're about to know. Is that it then, Kirby?
Yeah.
Okay, Debbie, what did you think?
I felt it was a much more grown-up episode. It was actually quite nice to have him just hold the story together by himself. Obviously, he had the Time Lords that he knew and, you know, meeting, you know, to sort of bounce off of character-wise. And it was great to have the Master back, because he's always good value. But I wish one of the main complaints I had was, obviously, I recognised the Master's voice, but it was very hard to hear him at the best of times, that mask. If they could have dubbed that...
Yes, good point, Debbie.
Effective. Thank you. It would have been much more effective, because, obviously, it's his face. But instead, it just sounded like he was speaking through a mask. Just a simple dubbing, that would have just increased my enjoyment billions of times over, because it was a good... a good story. I thought when we went into the Matrix, that was a great way of showing how it was working in there, you know, just this general his troubles and, you know, not bleeding, then bleeding, and, you know, this is I'm controlling the Matrix, Doctor, not you, that sort of thing. That was really, really quite cool as well. I enjoyed that bit. And it was just great to see the Time Lords, and the way that they do basically get whisked away at the end is like, go on, my troubled son, go off and do sow your wild oats before you come back here again. It really did feel like that.
Sow,
you know, just
your wild oats.
You know what I mean? Just go off, have adventures. Try not to put us into too much disrepute, but just go off and do what you were doing and get away from us for a while. You know, it did feel like sort of wayward son, off you go type thing, and it just. He didn't lose his glee throughout, even when he was this is how I feel Tom Baker just represents the Doctor most of the time, is just he's gleeful about it. And it, he didn't lose that all the way through, and it kept me engaged. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
There you go. Matthew, what did you think?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. Ironically, the first time I watched it was on VHS out of the local public library, and it was in the omnibus edition, so there were no cliffhangers. It was literally just a 90-minute movie. Mm-hmm. But it worked very well in that context. And I, you know, the funny thing is I sat down and watched the DVD again today, which was the first time it had been available here in North America, complete with cliffhangers. And it still manages to hold your attention. There's always that sort of sense of wanting to know what happens next. It's a very interesting story for me kind of looking at it, because everybody always goes on that there's sort of, you know, says, oh, it's Doctor Who doing the Manchurian Candidate. And it is, but it isn't in many respects. Yeah. Yeah. It is Doctor Who doing a 70s political thriller in many respects, because you do have sort of all this sort of vying for power and assassination and conspiracies, and the Doctor is being set up as the fall guy for an assassination, and it's playing around with all kinds of elements. I mean, the JFK assassination, of course, is back in the headlines at the time this story is being made, because the U.S. House of Representatives were reinvestigating the assassination and would eventually come to the conclusion there was a conspiracy. But that's happening while this story is being written. And there's sort of elements of the Kennedy assassination in it. You know, it's sort of – it's happening live on TV. The idea the assassin has to be gotten rid of quickly. Evidence disappears. You know, films, they're disappearing. Witnesses are being killed. So it's interesting in that perspective.
And news being manipulated, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it was based on the Mancunian, something like that. Mancunian.
Supposedly based on the Manchurian Candidate. And there's elements of that in here.
Yeah.
It's certainly in the way that sort of it ends up being about an assassination that's not quite what it seems. That, you know, the Master's obviously controlling people, which is very much like the mind control in both the book and especially the film version. But it owes as much to things like the 39 Steps, you know, John Buchan's novel with Richard Hannay, who finds himself an Englishman who's been in Africa for years, comes back home to England and finds himself drawn into a plot to potentially lead England to its destruction. Sound mildly familiar here.
Yeah,
the third episode is basically – it's playing around with a lot of fears and tropes. Once again, biplane chase at one point, which is straight out of both the 39 Steps and North by Northwest, the Hitchcock film. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hitchcock.
Yeah,
Hitchcock's Hitchcock's unofficial remake of, you know, his own version of the 39 Steps. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on here. It's also an important story in the Who canon, because the basis for everything that we've come to know, love, and hate about the Time Lords comes out of this story. You know, the 12 regeneration limit is literally a throwaway line in a scene late in this story, but it becomes the anchor of such an important part of the mythology. Rassilon's mentioned for the first time, as well as everything of Rassilon, for crying out loud. It's very much watching it now with some hindsight and retrospect and putting it in sort of its context in the era. It's basically Philip Hinchcliffe and Robert Holmes going, how much can we get away with? And The answer to the question is not as much as they apparently thought, because, of course, this is the story, along with Talons, that ends up with Philip Hinchcliffe leaving the show permanently at that point and Graham Williams coming in. And the show changes tone completely at that point. In some respects, it's the beginning of the end of the Hinchcliffe era. But if you're going to – if in that regard, it's a heck of a way to start your send off.
Yes, I can't really disagree with anything you're saying there, Matthew. And but we have one more opinion. Brace yourselves, it's Mary.
And I'm going to do some disagreeing here.
There's a surprise
with this. part of me, you know, took some joy in our being able to actually go to Gallifrey, because, you know, it's spoken of in such, you know, mysterious tones in previous stories. And the Time Lords there have been presented to us in the past as these mysterious, harsh, super intelligent beings. But when we actually
get pan-dimensional.
What?
But not pan-dimensional.
Okay. But when we get there, it turns out that they're just a bunch of pompous, stuffy old men, you know, who are more interested, like, in their own political survival than actually looking after the universe, which is what, you know, we initially were led to believe they did. in episodes 1 and 4, I felt were just rushed along, crammed full of information and technobabble, and sometimes, you know, as we're talking about throwaway lines that sound like information just made up at the time, which turns out to be the basis of a lot of future mythology for Doctor Who. Whereas episodes 2 and 3 suddenly, you know, it's like they put the brakes on, because now we're in, you know, the Matrix, and that Wild West show starts with this cat and mouse game that for me just went on and on, and because it doesn't advance the plot at all. I just felt was, you know, interminable, and, you know, and then we get to episode 4 and we're back into this, you know, crammed information and rushed scenes and all that. And so that did not sit well with me. I would not say that that flowed particularly nicely. A couple of things really bothered me. One, it's the most idiotic thing. The Time Lords, supposedly the highest civilization in the universe, they have absolutely no idea where any of their power comes from, and have apparently never even tried to find out until the Doctor figures it out in a couple of minutes. So that really brings down my opinion of the Time Lords. And the other thing is, just before leaving, the doctor sees the Master's TARDIS standing nearby. You know, he acknowledges what that is, but he doesn't question it. And what is also odd is that the Gallifreyans, which supposedly are able to recognize disguised TARDISes, because the captain of the guard recognized the Type 40 right away, you know, they're acting like they have no awareness of it there at all until Spandrel, you know, points it out. Oh, look at, you know, there's the Master's TARDIS. And they just stand there and look at it like, oh, well, you know, I guess he's not dead. He's going to carry on. You know, so great, Doctor, you have great adventures. But, oh, well, look at the Master. He's there, too. So those two things really bothered me. So I don't agree that the pacing was good. I don't agree that everything going on gels together and makes sense. I just think this is like a left-hand turn for the whole series to start over again and to build a new mythology. So in retrospect, we can say, wow, look at all this wonderful information we got here. But at the time, it must have been very confusing to the viewers.
So, you know, it's, well, sorry, Mary, didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead, I'm done.
Well, it's funny. A lot of your comments actually match the review that was done at the time by the now famous, sort of infamous review, John Vincent Rudzinski, I think is how you pronounce it, did at the time.
Oh, really?
For one of the fanzines called What Has Happened to the Magic of Doctor Who? And a lot of the points you raise are almost identical to his. So somebody captured your thoughts 42 years early.
Hey Matthew.
Must be that Time Lord, you know, precognition stuff.
Matthew, you know what's funny? Lillian apparently just said the same thing on the video.
So are you done, Mary?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right then. Now we've got some feedback via Kirby's request. Brian Doob says, great story. Laurie Nick said, swashbuckling Tom, pirate shirts for everyone. And then yeah. Mr. Darcy, did you get a facelift? And there's an image. It was images of a classical Gallifrey series, 88, The Deadly Assassin. There's posted a picture from The Deadly Assassin. And then she says, yo, Adam Pearson, you've been holding out on us.
Yeah.
Well, oh, I see.
The Pearson shirt is Renaissance. From Pearson's shop. Renaissance shop.
Yeah, it's Renaissance, Kirby, not okay. Renaissance.
Like the Kirby shop down the road.
Yeah. Laurie Nick says, Cardinal Barusa, just the best bitchy queen ever. And Jeff Waddle said, Mary Whitehouse does not like this. And Laurie Nick says, liberal pirate shirts or bitchy Barusa. And then Jeff Waddle said, she doesn't like the S&M drowning scene. The funny thing I saw on Facebook today was Jeff Waddle comparing, I think it was Laurie as his Facebook
yes,
wife.
Facebook
and yeah. Sean Homrig as his gay Facebook husband. Sean was particularly impressed with that, to be fair. then she says, Jeff Waddle, that's what she says. We know what those ultra conservatives are into. And then Jeff Waters said, I have it on good authority she was into all that bondage stuff. But I have to thank Lillian for that particular piece of feedback. Then Kirby Slartlet Bone, don't know who that is. OMG, how did I miss the Thesaurus reference? Shut up. You are correct. That's awesome. I'll not bring it up during the discussion and let it be revealed during the podcast by this feedback. It's unusual for you, Kirby. Hope the toe feels better. Lillian Robin says, I have an idea. Adam should wear Gallifrey and ceremonial lipstick while he's on video, and the rest of the men, Andy, Kirby, if they ever go on video again. That's not going to happen. We haven't got enough bandwidth for that. Any more replies? Oh, somebody called Slurby Gartlet Blown. Lillian, I don't think so. Right. And that went on for a bit. No, went on for a bit too long. And then Andy Nunny said, I've done cross-dressing. I'm going to leave it at that, shall we?
Oh, my God.
Right. I have had a confab with Mr. Alan Butcher. I said, who would you like to read your feedback this week? And the person he decided what he wants to read the feedback has just received that said feedback.
Let's see how badly I can. He's really gone for it today, so I'm just going to go
through
it.
You said you'd enjoy it.
Yeah, I bet he did. Home is where your hearts are, or utilitarianism at the fulcrum of time. Dear 20 megabyters, The Deadly Assassin is, of course, a closely studied contemplation of utilitarianism through the filter of the Doctor's and his homeworld's outlook on universal delivery of utility for sentient entities. This is quickly signposted by the employment of the Benthamite term panopticon. Jeremy Bentham, founder of modern utilitarianism and of my alma mater, University College London, used panopticon to name his design for a prison in which all the prisoners could be observed from a central point. It is easy to see the analogy to the central forum of the Time Lords, whose capacity to observe space-time is prodigious. Oh, God. Unlike another form of consequentialism, egoism here represented by the master, utilitarianism considers the interests of all beings equally, and as such, central debates within it are played out within the schism between the Doctor and the Time Lords. Key amongst these are whether, as the Doctor would contend, actions should be chosen based on their likely results, or whether, as is Time Lord orthodoxy, agents should conform to rules that maximise utility. Also, there is the dichotomy as to whether total or average utility should be maximised, the Time Lords practising the former and the Doctor the latter. The Master simply wants to maximise utility to himself, regardless to any opportunity cost for others, and has persuaded Goth to this philosophy as an agent to his Master's benefit. It should be noted that while some might suggest that such a bungling bunch of incompetent idiots could have never have assembled such a universally powerful and preeminent society as the Time Lords, we should remember that the United States of America is in many ways the leading nation on the planet Earth. Ooh. We also learn that corridor-detained dissident Dean survived the Salamander debacle to find his way to Gallifrey after some time working for Imperial Earth under the name Jaeger, and assumed the key role of Castellan at this great moment of potential cataclysm. We also realise that whilst Jeremy Bentham died in 1832 and was dissected, and his bones were stored, clothed and sat in a glass box in the north cloister of UCL for the best part of two centuries, he still managed to go on to be a pioneering Doctor Who fan in the late 20th century and early 21st century. All in all, The Deadly Assassin was a valiant and substantially successful attempt to accomplish the difficult task of representing an overwhelmingly advanced society previously only hinted briefly at. By adopting the decadence such a society might lapse into, it grounds it and enhances the Doctor's long-established choice to abandon it. Tom Baker gets his chance to have a companionless story, though the Castellan and young Engin do serve in some ways in that capacity. It was a bold new take on the Master, which sadly only lasted one more outing before the foolish move of echoing the original in a watered-down fashion was adopted. It is perhaps about 20 minutes too long, since Episode 3 is a horrible and perhaps pretentious waste of time. Next up, Doctor Who and best possible use for a cricket glove. Is it a cricket glove? Not sure. Who cares? Either way, there was no ball salvage. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
That's got to be worth one of them. Well done, Debbie.
Woo! You did very well. All
right. Matthew's glad he didn't have to read that. Is he?
I've done Shakespeare, so I'm not too scared at this point.
You show off.
Uh-oh, Matthew, if you're on next week's show, he may pick you.
Right, so we have a load of stuff come through on the live feed. We've had, let's see, where have we got up to?
I hope Lillian did great.
Lillian Robin said the head of DWAS in 1976 is interviewed on the documentary, and he agreed with Mary in 1976 but changed his mind.
Yes, yeah, because in retrospect, it all makes sense. But I'm thinking at the time, it is. I would think it would be very confusing to have all this new information thrown at you.
Maybe so. Then Lillian Robin said, ding dong. Oh, you're talking about the doorbell. Yes. Terry Miles, was it something someone said? Ian Kirk, there, there he was, gone. Joshua Dybul, weird, I'm here. Lillian Robin, I can hear you. Joshua Dybul, they've all gone now, lol. And then Laurie Nick said, Adam looks frustrated. Did someone's call drop? No, unfortunately, this speaker thing that you can hear their audio through sometimes times out, and this is what happened on that instance. Should get a better one, really, shouldn't I? I can't afford it. Lillian Robin says, are there any Doctor Who stories that Alan hasn't closely studied? Yeah, we haven't watched them yet.
All the ones we haven't gotten to yet.
Yeah. Laurie Nick said, yay, I can hear a bit. Just in time for Alan's feedback. And then Laurie Nick said, damn buffering. Oh, dear. Alan T. Butcher says, Debbie, 9 out of 10. So if it had been Thank 10 you. Out of 10, Debbie, you would have got 2 dings.
Very nice.
We still have more feedback to partake with. Something on the lines of this.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hey.
The Dudley Assassin. Oops, I went a bit Andy Nunny there. The Deadly Assassin by Robert Holmes. Lots of newly created Gallifrey tradition in this one. Rassilon, the Eye of Harmony, etc. The only story with no mention of a companion or companion light. Seems it might be referencing the Kennedy assassination, which happened the day before the very first Doctor Who was broadcast. Also the resignation of Nixon, which happened 2 years before this story aired. Turns out it's the master what done it, crispy critter that he's become. The Doctor fights in an imaginary world, not for the last time. Clean up TV campaigner Mary Whitehouse made a great fuss, complaining about the drowning scene, well I bet she never saw it. For the first time I'm recording this on a Raspberry Pi computer. The heck with PC versus Macintosh. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian.
Thanks, Ian.
Yes, as viewers may be wondering what I was doing in the background, obviously the dogs woke up. She must be obeyed. And, well, initially it was the doorbell that woke her up. Then the dogs woke her up. And then she's woken up. So, and she's doing very rude gestures at me at the moment through the door. Right. Where do we get up? The door shut. So the next thing we've got to do, if I can get my thing, my podcast back on track after all the weird interruptions that don't normally happen on the show. What are you implying, Kirby? It's this week's edition of You Won't Get This One. Neck, it's 20 past eight. Right, so, Mary, who do you think's... This is, bear in mind, I've got a pile of Trivial Pursuit questions in my hand. Here they are. Yes. Who do you think's going to be the winner?
Matthew. I don't think you have to ask anybody else. I think they'll all say the same thing.
Is everybody going to say Matthew? Apart from Matthew, of course. I don't know what he's going to say. I'll put down.
Yeah, what's Matthew going to say?
What are you going to? Who's going to be the winner, Matthew?
Debbie.
Right, if we're going to
Matthew, you pick yourself if you have any.
Yeah. I'm going Kirby.
Andy says Kirby. All right.
Yeah, because Triple Suit. I'm going Kirby.
Okay, so anybody else? So, not say Matthew.
I say Matthew.
I say Matthew.
Okay, there we go. Right then. Mary, who's going to be last?
Me.
Who's rubbing their microphones just about to get a point deducted?
Ooh, who do you think?
It's gone very quiet.
Yes, me.
Andy, who do you think is going to be
me,
last?
Yeah, it's me.
Who's going to be last? Andy.
Me.
Oh.
Oh.
Interesting. Right. And Kirby, who do you think is going to be last?
Mary.
And Debbie, who do you think is going to be last?
I'm always useless at the general knowledge, me.
Interesting.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
Matthew, who's going to be last?
Go ahead,
I'm going to go with Andy.
Andy.
Yeah,
right.
Good choice, Kirby. Good choice.
Oh, that makes life interesting. Right, we do have all jokers in place, and of course if I say the words you won't get this one and you do get it, then points are doubled. And the current scores are: in last place with minus 1 point, it's Andy. Second place with 0 points, it's Mary, Kirby. Oh, that's it. And in that was third place. In second place, sorry, Matthew with 1 point, and in the lead with 2 points, it's Debbie.
Yay!
Woo. So the first random question off this card goes to, I can't see it, Alexa, turn front room light on.
Well, it goes to Alexa.
Okay.
Well, it's a bit loud. I get into trouble for that. Good Lord. Is that Alexa? Oh, I can see the card now. Right then, so Mary.
Yes.
The Time Lords put a time loop around the lost fifth planet of the Earth's solar system to trap which composite creature that fed on life itself?
I know.
I don't know.
Was that to you, Matthew? You said, I know?
Yeah, it was a whispered one, wasn't it?
Go on in, Matthew.
It was the Fendel.
I would have given you 1 point for saying that correctly, but I'll give you... Yeah. Fendal, everybody.
Yeah, Fendal.
She said Fendel, the new Fendel.
Ah, I do apologize.
Not good enough.
Also, you should have used... No.
No, you couldn't. No,
right?
You shouldn't have used your Joker. Take no notice of Kirby. It's all tactical.
Use your Joker when you're the one being asked.
Yes.
Yeah.
Take any notice of Kirby. Right then. Andy.
Yep.
When River Song slipped a micro explosive into Dorian Molivar's Moldova. He said a happy birthday to me, by the way. I got a happy birthday message from Mr. Dorian Moldova.
Cool.
I thought that was very nice of him. Very nice man. Into his drink. What did she then offer him which would disarm it in exchange for a vortex manipulator?
No idea.
Does anybody know?
I can guess she put an earring in there.
Oh, that was a good guess. It's a wrong guess. It probably was in the form of earring, but that's not what the answer is. The answer was a Callisto Pulse.
Oh.
Right, Kirby.
Master.
What London landmark did Mr. Magpie ascend in the Idiot's Lantern under the wire's influence?
I know.
The TV aerial above the...
Yeah.
Whatever that palace is.
I know.
Not close enough, Kirby. Go on in.
The Crystal Palace TV tower.
Was it? No, I'm afraid it wasn't that either. No. What happened there? Somebody sounded like somebody dropped a drink then. Yeah, the answer was Alexandra Palace TV tower.
Oh, Palace! And you know what? Blooming Dawn was at the Ali Pally 2 weeks ago.
No, on Thursday.
We don't get any points for that.
Yeah, be right.
I got that wrong. Oh, Jesus. Thursday, Dawn was actually Ali Pally.
Dawn,
we were both close enough, I thought.
Shut up, Kirby. Dawn, do you think Andy should get a point deducted for getting that one wrong?
Dawn,
I think so. Because
yeah, okay, good. Okay, that's fine. The lovely Dawn has spoken. Point deducted for Andy.
I love my wife.
Right then, Debbie.
Yes.
What year did the real Titanic make her maiden voyage?
I know.
Oh, my God.
I know.
I don't know. 1910?
Pardon?
1910?
No, I know.
I only know you know, Andy. Go on, then.
Yeah, we know.
Was George's blue shiny in 1912?
It was 1912.
Bloody Georgia's child is in there as well.
My grandpa was born that for a year.
Aww. I just Googled it. It says 31st of May 1911.
Wrong. That was when the ship was launched, not when it actually set sail.
Wrong.
But it sank.
April 1912. Right then, Matthew.
Yes.
Okay, let's move on. I'm only joking. Right, Matthew. The Mocks of Balhoon worked for Jolco and Jolco, but what was their profession?
I think I know.
I'm going to hand this one over to Kirby because I obviously don't know this.
Go on in, solicitors. Kirby. Solicitors is correct. Nobody's played their Joker yet. So we have 5 points in the bonus pot.
It's because nobody's known the answer at first.
Yeah, this is actually both of these questions.
5 points in the bonus pot. And if you know the answer, say, I know. And hopefully I'll work out who said it and then might get work somewhere in the quiz. Which infamous building, sorry, I'll say that again. Which famous building in New York did the Cult of Scarrow and Mr. Diagor... Was that you, Kirby?
Yes.
I didn't even finish the question. Yes, go on then.
Joker, the Empire State Building.
Yeah, so obvious.
Yes, changes things slightly, doesn't it? And Joker gone.
I was
going to
at least wait till you finished reading the question.
Yeah, that's what Kirby does, though.
It was obvious.
It's all tactical. Right.
Well, why don't you read the question so that everyone knows?
I'll be quiet. It's all random. The random questions. Yeah, so that means the scores are now in last place with minus 1 point, it's Andy.
Yeah.
In fourth place with no points, it's Mary. In joint third place with 2 points each, it's Debbie and Matthew. And in the lead with 11 points, it's Kirby.
Hey!
Mary.
Brilliant. That's the way it should be.
Mary.
Yes.
Right. What age does the 10th Doctor say he was when he visited the Medusa Cascade as a child?
I'll have a go.
Oh, I don't know.
Going in, Andy.
1950.
1950, did you say?
950.
Oh.
He was a child and he was 950, okay?
Nope. Yes, well, he could have been. He's a Time Lord. No, the answer was 90.
Ah.
Yes. Right, Andy.
Yeah, go on.
What was the name of the Silurian ambassador who put his people back into hibernation at the end of Cold Blood?
God.
No, it wasn't that.
It was the guy who was in Hitchhiker's Guide. The actor, I know who it is.
No.
Name, I have not a faintest idea, so no chance.
Okay, right. Anybody?
No.
No, right, okay. Therefore, the answer was Eldane.
Obviously.
Yeah. Right, Kirby.
Master.
In Gridlock, how quickly did the Bliss virus kill everybody in the Overcity?
Very quickly.
It's a certain number of seconds, but I don't remember precisely.
Anybody?
I'll try it.
Oh, hang on. Andy's going to have a go.
30.
30 what?
30 the question was how many seconds. So
no, it wasn't. It said in Gridlock, how quickly did the Bliss...
Yeah,
it didn't say anything about seconds. Thank you very much. So what was your guess?
30 seconds.
I thought it was an hour or something.
No. Yeah. It was 7 minutes.
Oh, Christ.
Mm. Oh.
Mm. Right.
Crikey.
Bless you, Wyatt.
Debbie.
Yeah?
The 10th Doctor gives Rose a list of great things that happened in a particular year, including the Muppet movie being released. What year was he talking about?
Why am I getting...
I know.
Oh, Matthew knows.
1981?
No, go on then, Matthew.
She's very close. It's 1979.
She is very close. Very,
God.
So he also mentions the Skylab space station falling out of the sky.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Right. That was your question, Debbie, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm doing real bad.
No, you're not.
No, you're not.
Matthew.
Yes.
What was the name of the great... Sorry, I'll start that again. What was the name of the giant space station that the second Doctor defended against the Cybermen when he first met Zoe Harriet?
Okay, it's not the obvious answer. I honestly can't remember what it was actually properly called, so I'm actually going to pass on it.
Anybody? Oh dear, it's all gone quiet over there again. Okay, well, I apologise to the listeners for huffing all over the microphone. The answer was the wheel.
Oh, really?
Oh my god, really?
That's what it says. So it was the obvious answer. And
I could have swore it had like a more official designation and it was known unofficially as the wheel, hence the wheel in space.
Now it's called the wheel. We've got some things come through on the feed. Laurie Nixit, I got my tablet pressed up against my ear to hear. I'm telling everyone I'm listening to the match game. That's sports, Kirby. Billy Kirkbright said, good morning, fellow listeners and hosts of this wonderful avenue of listening and watching pleasure. I presume he's talking, he's actually accidentally posted an ours by mistake and he's actually listening to Radio 2. And then Lillian Robin replying to Billy, good afternoon, Billy. Well, we'll say good afternoon, Billy, even though he's accidentally tuned into the 20 megabyte podcast by mistake. Right, there's... Where do we get up to? Oh, we are, right. There's, oh, yes, 8 points in the bonus spot for this question. Are we ready?
Yes.
Correct.
You have
correct.
To answer everybody.
That was a joke. That was a question. I said, are you ready? Never mind. This is the actual question. Which Agatha Christie novel has a plot strand about a wasp perhaps triggered... By
I know.
The events of Edison Hall. Go on then.
Of course you know.
It's Death in the Air.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear.
Oh, no, it's not.
Is it
not?
No, it isn't. Andy, Andy, do you know?
I've read it and I can't think of it. Oh, Jesus.
Ready?
No, I'm not going to get it. I should know it. It's not. It's,
okay, we haven't actually given me an answer. Anybody want to try and give me an answer to get...
Dawn, do you want to go?
Not Dawn, she's not in the quiz, you silly man.
Yes, she is, she's probably... Agatha Christie, it's the one where... It's the wasp is stung on an aeroplane between London and Paris.
Oh.
Death in Flight.
No, what you said, Matthew.
I said Death in the Air.
Yeah.
No. The answer is... Death in the Clouds.
Oh.
However, Matthew, what did you say?
Yes, well, I know that book.
Matthew, tell me.
I said
what...
Death in the Air, so I'm
going to give you the points there, Matthew, because actually it does say in brackets afterwards, Matthew. Yes. Matthew, it does say in brackets afterwards, or Death in the Air in the USA. So Matthew is going to get the points after all.
Oh, really?
I should have read the whole answer, shouldn't I? So well done, Matthew.
Fair play, Matthew. You've got it right, mate.
Right, so the current scores are, in last place with minus one, it's Andy.
Yep.
In fourth place with no points, it's Mary. In third place with 2 points, it's Debbie. Second place with 11 points, it's Kirby. And then the lead with 19 points is Matthew. And he hasn't even played his Joker yet.
Has Andy even gotten any right?
Oh, I've miscalculated.
Yet?
It's still. I made a call.
Right.
Yeah, sorry. I doubled his points and he hadn't played his Joker, so that's wrong. I'll recount that one. Sorry. In joint lead with 11 points each, it's Kirby and Matthew. So I apologise for that. Everybody got all excited then, and I made a right balls up of the whole thing. If I'd been playing, I would have deducted a point from myself. Right, Mary, are you ready?
I am.
Which East Sussex school did Harold Saxon's wife Lucy attend? We won't get this one.
Oh, rather.
You're right, I won't. I pass on it.
Right, anybody?
No.
Nope.
Okay, nope. Then the answer is Rodine.
Oh,
that one. Yeah, that one.
Yeah. I'm sure about that one, yeah.
Andy.
Hello.
Which two... Vinvucci fly, which two Vinvucci fly a spaceship called Hesperus? Won't get this one.
Well, given that I don't even understand the question,
I can't even understand the question.
All right, I'll do it again then. Listen, which two Vinvucci fly a spaceship called Hesperus? Okay, right.
I know who they are, but I don't remember their names. They're the
right.
The spiky,
no idea
spiky
whatsoever.
Okay,
I didn't even understand the question.
Never mind. Either way, nobody knows it, so we're moving on. Right then, Kirby.
Wait, you're not going to answer the name?
Oh, sorry, yes. Rossiter and Adams, okay?
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And you think my questions are hard. Right then, Kirby.
Master.
What giant creatures roam London's sewers in the talons of Weng Chiang?
Too bad I've already used my joker. That's a giant rat.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
How can you get finally, a Debbie. Question somebody uses a joker on us.
Debbie, which now deceased singer did the doctor suggest that he and Rose go and see in a concert in Sheffield in 1979?
Oh.
Oh. God. Yes.
Oh. No idea.
Ooh, we're just about to play with Boomer. Anybody?
So I had to say Michael.
No. The answer was Ian Dury and the Blockheads.
Never heard of them.
Well, that one's in Doctor Who. You must have heard of them.
Right, well, that's not a singer. That's a band.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't write the questions. I just give you them, and you just have to. Never mind. Moving on. Right then, Matthew.
Did Kirby and Andy swap around pedanticness for today?
It was like it, didn't it?
Matthew.
I'm here.
What kind of people do the Echnodi... I'll say that again. What kind of people do the Echnodynes possess when they are sent to Earth in the Dream Lord's mysterious reality?
Oh, Joker, it's senior citizens.
Wow. Do for me.
Well done, Matthew.
Yeah.
Now I've got to work out how many points we had on now.
Several.
23, right. Yeah, that's correct. All right, so. Oh, that was your question, wasn't it? Oh,
black. Yes, made it was.
Pig zero that. So the amount of points I add on, therefore, are 4. So that changes that to that. Yes, so I've made a right pig zero that. Right, I've dropped my card. Where's the card gone? I've dropped my card. Ah, where's it gone? I'll have to get another one. I can't find it. Oh, dear. I'll have to get another card for the 6 points in the bonus pot, everyone. Ready?
Ready.
What was the name of the Kent airfield that Group Captain Childers dispatched a squadron of fighters from in Victory of the Daleks? I don't think you'll get this one, so you won't get this one.
I'll have a go. I think...
Go on.
Is it like Biggin Hill?
Oh, my God.
Yes!
Oh my goodness! Wow.
That was a bit of a turn, wasn't
Andy.
It?
Are we sure
I'm
that
astonished.
He's not Wikipediaing it?
No, I, not Kirby. I resemble that comment. Instantly.
So that changes the scores slightly. Right. And did you play your Joker then? Did you play your Joker then, Andy?
No. Yes, I did. Yes.
He did not.
He didn't.
He didn't.
That's a shame.
No, I didn't.
Should have done, really. Right then, so current scores are...
I should have done, but I didn't.
Okay, all right. In last place, with no points, it's Mary. In fourth place, with 2 points, it's Debbie. In third place, with 5 points, it's Andy. In second place, with 13 points, it's Kirby. And in the lead with 15 points, it's Matthew. Next question goes to Mary. And it's this one. How many times did the 9th and 10th Doctors visit Cardiff?
Oh, my goodness.
Times.
Visit Cardiff? Wow, 9th and 10th Doctors. I'll just hazard the guess of 5.
What on earth was that noise?
Me blowing my nose.
No, it's that one.
Can I have a go?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Was it 3?
Yay!
Oh. I got one!
Can they be named?
You got a point.
Can they be named? What do you mean?
Yeah, name what the stories are.
Oh.
Well, the one with the...
Unquiet Dead, Boomtown, and the very beginning of Utopia.
There you go.
Wow.
I am nerd, hear me poor.
For the 10th?
Yeah, it's the very beginning of Utopia. They land to refuel the TARDIS on the rift, and that's when Jack jumps on.
Oh, okay.
Well, then technically it's 4 times, because he goes back.
By the way, I've done Andy out of some points. I'm just adding him on, so that does get. I forgot I said you won't get this one when he answered that question, so that doubles.
Oh, thank you. Sorry, thank about you, Andy.
That was them.
So he probably just went past me.
Right. So who was that question for? Three times. That was Aunt Mary's question, which Debbie That's got the points question. For. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Right, Andy.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
What did Riversong destroy with an Alpha Mason gun in the National Museum?
I know.
Ooh.
Was it the Doctor's fez?
Well, no. Go on then, Matthew.
It was a Dalek, a stone Dalek to be exact.
Precisely correct, yes. A stone Dalek. Right. Kirby.
Master.
Which famous psychic complained that he was out of a job now that ghosts were everywhere in the army of ghosts? You won't get this one.
I won't get that one.
Especially as you're American. Anybody?
That psychic, come on, Dawn, what's his name? The one you like.
The one you like, that'd be Adam Pearson.
No, come on. The psychic you like, that guy. What's his name? Come on.
I think I know.
Go on then, Debbie.
Paul McKenna.
That was tactical from Debbie.
We've actually met him, but I can't think of his name.
Yeah, shall I tell you then? Oh. It's Derek Acora was the answer.
Yes, we've actually met him as well.
Oh, he's a prat.
Oh, he's a very nice chap.
We met him at Castle in Portsmouth. Right. We actually did a psychic evening with him.
Okay, according to my records, three people haven't played their jokers as yet. That'd be That's Mary,
I haven't.
Andy, Debbie. No,
I
Debbie,
haven't.
This is your question.
Whose question, sorry?
It's your question, Debbie.
Okay.
In the stop arguing. In the alternative...
I'm getting thrown in the
Be quiet. Right, what's your name? Debbie, isn't it? Right. In the alternate timeline created by River's Song to save the Doctor's life, what wonder of the world housed Area 52?
I know.
Go on. Oh, sorry. In a minute, Matthew. Go on in, Debbie.
I can't remember. I'm going to hazard a guess. I think it's the Pyramid of Giza.
I love the way you said hazard a guess. Should have played a joke.
I did. I was. I can't remember.
It's a great answer.
I should have played that.
You should have known. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Matthew.
Yes.
On what world does the 10th Doctor encounter future kind?
Utopia.
Unfortunately.
No, this isn't.
Anybody?
No.
The answer was... Malcaserio or something. Malcaserio?
Malcaserio? The episode Utopia, not the planet.
The episode Utopia,
right. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see what I did there.
Right, there's 6 points in the bonus part, and if somebody plays a joker on this, of course it doubles. Unless, of course, I say you won't get this one, then it quadruples. So this will be interesting, won't it? This question. Oh, funny you should have said Utopia. It's this. In Utopia, what natural world in California does the Doctor liken the rift through Cardiff to?
Oh,
okay.
Don't play the joker.
Hang on. Who started speaking first, Debbie?
I think I got beaten. It wasn't me.
No,
Matthew
started. Well, Matthew went O.
Matthew did it. Matthew said O first,
But what did
Matthew was first.
Go on there, Matthew.
It's the geyser at Yellowstone.
Oh, that's
interesting. If I remember correctly.
No. Right, Andy, what do you reckon?
I'm going to say Yellowstone Park.
Yeah. No.
Oh.
Nope, the answer was the San Andreas Fault.
Oh.
All right.
So there's still 6 points in the bonus pot. The scores are, in last place with no points, it's Mary. Right. In fourth place with 5 points, it's Debbie. In third place with 11 points, it's Andy. In second place with 13 points, it's Kirby. And then the lead with 16 points is Matthew. Right. Here we go. Next question goes to Mary. Are you ready for this, Mary?
Yep.
Right. Which two doctors featured in the story The Two Doctors?
Oh, no.
All right, I'll play my joker.
Yeah, go on then.
The numbers or the actors' names?
Well, I'll give you either or.
The second and the sixth.
Here's the correct answer.
Mary has points.
Yes, she does indeed. Yeah.
Well done, Mary.
Right then, Andy.
Thank you for an easy question.
Andy? When the fourth Doctor dropped Sarah Jane off in what he told her was Croydon, in what city was he actually in?
Sorry, I lost the end of that because Lorraine Kirby jumped in. Okay,
so what city was Sarah Jane Smith actually dropped off in when she thought she was supposed to be dropped off in Croydon? She was dropped off somewhere else. Where
was? Well, it wasn't Croydon because having worked in Croydon, I recognise it wasn't Croydon.
I know that, but so where was she actually dropped off?
I think it was Brighton.
Oh dear.
Go on, Kirby.
Aberdeen.
Yes, it was. Right. So, Kirby.
And we just did that story.
We did.
Mm-hmm. Master?
Yes. It's complete the story title.
Ooh.
Of Ghosts.
No. Army.
Sorry, what did
Army.
Army. There we go. Yeah, there we go.
Easy, these questions.
Debbie.
I've got two easy ones.
Debbie. Yeah.
Then again, two hard ones.
Shush. In what year did the fifth Doctor meet the Silurians in a story where humanity was involved in the Cold War? Now, do you want me to give you the year options of this, or do you know it?
I know it.
I have no clue, but...
Here's the options. Here's the options, Debbie. 2084, 2085, 2013, 3000.
Mm. 2013?
Nope.
Matthew, did you say you knew?
Yes, I do indeed. It is the year 2084.
Fantastic.
Of course he does.
Yep, and Big Finish's sequel story with Sylvester McCoy's Doctor, the Silurian Candidate, is set the following year in 2085.
Brilliant, I'll have to find that.
Right. Matthew.
Yes.
What villain do the robot Yeti faced by the second Doctor serve?
The Great Intelligence.
Right, there's 8 points in the bonus pot for this question, everybody, so please pay attention, especially the two people who haven't played their jokers yet. Right. Richard Wilson starred in the ninth Doctor adventure, Empty Child, but what grumpy character was he famous for?
I know.
For? Go on then, Debbie.
And Joker, Victor
Meldrew. What was the entire question? She jumped in.
Well, can I read the quote for Kirby's benefit? It won't make a difference.
Of course, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Richard Wilson starred in the ninth Doctor adventure, The Empty Child, but what grumpy character was he famous for playing? And there was 4 options, which I didn't get to because Debbie knew it anyway. Basil Fawlty, Edmund Blackadder, Victor Meldrew, and Bishop Brannan. The answer was... Victor Meldrew.
Bishop Brannan.
Well done, Matt. Well done, Debbie.
Right, there's one card left in the quiz. The current scores are, in last place with 4 points, it's Mary. In fourth place with 11 points, it's Andy. In third place with 16 points, it's Kirby. In second place with 19 points, it's Matthew. And in the lead with 21 points, it's Debbie.
Oh my God.
I told you.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
What?
What do you mean, what? You played your joker on the bonus pot question.
Yeah, I know, but it's still a bit of a surprise.
That's the way it goes.
Not to me, it isn't.
Right then, Mary, your question.
Go on.
What was the name of the Prime Minister in The Sound of Drums who was actually the Master in disguise?
I know.
Joker.
Hang on. It's Mary's question.
I thought you said Andy.
No.
No.
You said Mary.
Sorry, mate. I've just sworn you said Andy. Sorry, mate.
No, I didn't. Mary, what's the answer?
Gosh, I know this. I do know this.
Do you?
I can see the posters.
Mary, it's Saxon.
When you say you do know this, rather implies that you don't.
Go on, Mary. Just say it.
Well, it's Saxon.
No, it is Saxon, but you don't get any points, and Andy gets 2 points deducted for shouting the answer out. And there we go. Right, so that's the end of that question. Right then, Andy.
Yeah, whatever.
What type of alien were given spiky headed friends Rossiter and Adams? Do you want me to read out the options for you, Andy?
Yes, please.
The options are Shut Up, Kirby, that's option number one. Sycorax, Adipose, Vinvoci, or Slitheen?
I know.
Well, I don't. I will go. Well, the only Poes weren't spiky headed.
I think my saying it's easy means I said.
Shut up, Kirby.
Can you give me the options again, please, Adam?
All right, the options are, for the final time, Sycorax, Adipose, Vinvoce, and Slitheen.
Sycorax.
Kirby, did you say you knew?
Yes, Vinvoce, because we just dealt with that.
Yes, it was just mentioned in an earlier question, funny enough. Yes. Right, Kirby.
Master.
Excuse me.
Excuse you.
Yeah, what kids' TV show does the Master watch when he's imprisoned in the Sea Devils?
Oh,
I know.
They make those bell-like sounds. Where are they?
Would you like me to show you one? I've got one sat over there somewhere.
Well, I'm not watching the videos. I have no idea. I don't remember the name. I'm sorry.
Going in, Andy.
Bye, guys.
Correct. Okay. Debbie.
Yes.
Right, your question is this. In 1888, Madame Vastra found an Aita famous killer before contacting the police and letting them take the credit.
I know.
Who was he?
It was Jack the Ripper.
It was what?
Jack the Ripper.
Yes, it was Jack the Ripper. Right, Matthew.
Yes.
What planet do the Ice Warriors call home?
Mars.
You answered that in a very Kirby-esque way. And the last question is this. That's a bonus pot question, 2 points. Ian Glenn portrayed Father Octavian in Flesh and Stone, but what HBO fantasy drama does he star in as Jorah Mormont?
I think I know.
Yeah, go on in.
I think I know that.
Go on in. What's your name again? Matthew.
Game of Thrones?
Yay!
All right.
Was indeed Game of Thrones.
I mean, what other HBO fantasy series was it going to be?
Indeed, right. Now, we've got the situation now that two players are on the tie, right? So I now have to ask a tiebreak question, and I'm going to ask the person in last place to choose a colour out of these. Mary, colours are blue, pink, yellow, purple, green, or orange. Which colour would you like me to pose the tiebreaker question?
Pink.
Right then, so this goes to Debbie and Matthew. Are you ready?
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Right, here we go. What was the name of the first Doctor's granddaughter?
I know.
Susan. Dear. That was the tiebreaker there.
I barely had a chance to open my mouth.
You donut. There was a definite pause, and he's much further away than you are, Debbie. Right. The current scores... Oh, Andy gets a point deducted because he didn't play his Joker, so that goes down to 9. Current scores are...
I lost it.
Yeah, I know, but it's the way it goes. It's a quiz. Uh-huh. In last place with 4 points, Mary. In fourth place with 9 points, Andy. In third place with 17 points, Kirby. In second place with 23 points, Debbie. In first place with 24 points is Matthew.
Oh, right. God.
Wow.
Right, Mary predicted Matthew to be ahead and Mary to be at the bottom. And... Andy predicted Kirby to be ahead and Andy to be at the bottom. Kirby predicted Matthew to be ahead and Mary to be at the bottom. Debbie predicted Matthew to be ahead. Ooh, hang on, typed the wrong button then. And then she predicted Debbie to be at the bottom. And Matthew... Oh dear, I did that completely wrong. And Matthew predicted Debbie to be ahead and Andy to be at the bottom. So the final scores, and this week she won't get this one, are in last place with 9 points, Andy. In fourth place with 16 points, Mary. In third place with 24 points, Matthew. In second place with 46 points, Debbie. But the winner this week with 68 points is Kirby. Right, further things have come through on the Facebook feed. Billy Kirkbright says Radio 2. ! It's a BBC channel. Then he says, hello, Alan and Laurie. You lot didn't get a hello there. Then he says, and whoever else is here. Oh, that would be us then. Can't see who's watching. Laurie next says, hit me with your rhythm stick. I could if I could reach you, Laurie. And then she says, and the blockheads. Billy Kirkbright, what a waste. No, oh, was he talking about the podcast? Alan T. Butcher said, Andy dropped a clanger.
Yeah, I did, didn't I?
And then Lillian Robin said, pink, my favourite colour. She's talking about what colour I am at the moment, because it is rather hot in here. It's the middle of the summer, everybody. Okay, a very unusual scene in the background. We've got the two dogs lying and sitting next to each other. That doesn't happen very often. So we better really move on to my next subject of conversation, which is the Isle of Wight Comic Con. Debbie will now engross us with the current guest list.
Oh, I haven't got it up, sorry. Oh,
beg your pardon.
That's what she said.
We've got Brian back, so I'm happy.
Humongous list of living celebrities, most of whom I don't know who they are. But, I mean, the fact that most of the cast of... what's that film I mentioned at the beginning? The film I mentioned at the beginning, the comedy thing. American Pie, that's the one, yeah. Most of the cast of American Pie are at the Comic-Con. I'm trying to find media guests, here we are.
I've never seen that.
I've seen a couple, the first two. They're very funny and smutty. But we've also got Jessica Jane Stafford, Connor Trinneer, who apparently was in Star Trek Enterprise, Stargate Origins and Stargate Atlantis. Jason Font, who was a Power Ranger, and as were Jason Narvi and Paul Schreier. We've got Mark Outbreak, who is... in Back to Weapon 10 or something like that. Blake Foster, Power Rangers. Jessica Messenger, who was in Rats, Six Hot Chicks and a Warehouse. James Hamer Morton, Lilo and Stitch, My Body Banjo. I thought Lilo and Stitch was a cartoon. I'm going to skip through a few of these. Oh, Valerie Leon, who was quite sexy. The picture of her on the page is from when she was young and when people actually recognise, especially in this country. Thomas Ian Nichols, who was in American Pie and Walt Before Mickey. Charlie Bond, who was in Strippers versus Werewolves. That sounds like an interesting film.
Oh my.
I'm moving to skip. Oh, Tara Reid, that's the most recent American Pie guest announced. And the funny thing I remember about Tara Reid, apart from being in American Pie, was when she was in Celebrity Big Brother with Jedward, and Jedward tried to make out that they were very, very good friends with Tara Reid, but she's quite a pretty woman. Actually, quite looking forward to meeting her. She's quite nice. Walter Jones, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, The Shield and Brink. Somebody called Sean Astin, Lord of the Rings, Stranger Things. And yay, a great list they haven't actually bothered to put on here that doesn't include my favourite film, Click. Rochelle Davis, Sarah from The Crow, Mackenzie Lintz, Hunger Games, Under the Dome, Jason Mewes, who was Brian O'Halloran's sidekick in the Clerks 1 and 2.
No, he's not his sidekick.
Well, that's how I remembered it, thank you very much. Gone quiet now, haven't you? Michael Eklund, who was...
Silent Bob's sidekick, so...
He was in Wynonna Earp, Bates Motel, The Call, Dirt Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. Chris Owen.
Which version?
What blemming, no. Chris Owen, who was in American Pie. Gary Jones, Stargate SG-1, Stargate Atlantis, Stargate Universe and Supernatural. Joseph...
SGU was a lot better than it was.
Joseph Pantoliano, who was in The Matrix, Goonies, Sopranos, Daredevil and Bound. Shannon Elizabeth, American Pie, and Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back. Brian O'Halloran, who's in Clerks, Mallrats, View, Awkwardverse. I can't say that. Sylvester
and
McCoy.
His favourite ever interviewer was me.
Apparently so. Is that what he said?
No.
Yeah. Well, he might have done. Sylvester McCoy, who was in The Hobbit. Hui Huan. Yeah. Mm. Kei Hui Huan, who is in The Goonies and Indiana Jones.
Him.
Mark Sears, who was in Wolverine fan films. John Davey, friend of the show. And then we've got Byling, Kerry, got here, I can't say that. Ethan Phillips, who it was the legendary character Neelix in Star Trek Voyager, but he was also in the Island Critters in Star Trek Enterprise. Erin Cahill, who's Power Rangers. That's the some of them. Some of the media gets. It's ridiculous, isn't it? What do you reckon, Deb?
I think it's brilliant.
Do you?
Mm.
Why aren't you going?
I think Matthew should have a chance.
Why am I going? Oh dear.
Yeah.
I'm there if you need me. If you don't want to buy a ticket, it's fine.
Yeah, so everybody, I'd like to see you all at the Isle of Wight Comic Con. It's going to be huge. I think it's probably the biggest con in the south of England.
We will hopefully have a sofa bed if anybody fancies coming over for a night and dossing at ours.
It's a rather weird thing to announce on a sort of semi-international podcast.
Yeah, but I know that I can say no to people. It's fine.
Well, you just said yes to people by offering you a bed to them, you silly woman.
I said we've got one, and if anybody...
I bet you have.
They're coming over, and... That's fine. If they're worried about accommodation, I can put somebody up. It's fine.
She just did it again.
I know. Anyway, moving on. Doctor Who News.
Oh, that's a loyal.
Wait, before you go on to Doctor Who News, I think we need to hear from Matthew about what's coming up at Con Casterbrus next weekend.
Do we, Mary?
Yes.
We do.
Go on.
There are absolutely. I might not be here, and I'm a bit miffed now.
Oh, dear. Go on in, Matthew.
Thank you, Mary. That was very kind of you.
I would have got there. I'm only trying to cover
There are American listeners to this.
If she hadn't said it, I probably would have.
I would have said so.
Since 20 Megabyte is supposed to be is doing a live show from there on the Sunday in the panel room. So if you're at the con, please show up. But otherwise, Con Casterbrus, Alabama's Doctor Who convention next weekend.
Love that.
Oh, there he is. He's back.
Don't even get me started on the pronunciation of this. Please do not get me started.
Just kick him out.
Anyway, Alabama's Doctor Who convention next weekend, or I guess it'll be this coming weekend by the time listeners hear this episode, June 9th and 10th at the Westin at Bridge Street here in lovely Huntsville, Alabama.
Bless you, Andy.
Andy's allergic to Huntsville.
Sorry, I did try and move it away.
Anyway, our guests will include Mark Shepard, Canton Everett Delaware III in The Impossible Astronaut Day of the Moon, but also known for roles as Crawley in Supernatural, Battlestar Galactica, The X-Files. You name a genre show, chances are he's probably been in it, and if he hasn't been in it, then his dad was probably in it.
He's one of my heroes. He's brilliant.
What, me?
Who else? Oh, dear.
Carry on.
That was a very apt line.
Catherine Stewart will also be one of our guests. Jenny Flint, one of the members of the Paternoster Gang, which should be fun because we had Neve McIntosh, Madame Vastra, last year. Kelly Yates, who's worked on the Titan and IDW Doctor Who comics, and who's been on the show before, I believe. And Ellie Collins, who's a Huntsville native writer and actress who's worked on CW's show The Originals and also is the author of both the Empire Valley novel series and the Blood Crow Stories podcast. And, of course, I'll be here. Kirby will be here. Kirby will be hosting the trivia contest at noon on Saturday, and we will both be on a panel talking about the iconic Patrick McGoohan 60s series The Prisoner on Sunday morning. So if you're at the con, please come up to us and say hello.
Just make sure you get given the right time for it, Matthew, because he has a tendency of cocking up times.
That was an accident.
Was it? Right, Doctor Who News.
That's never going to happen again because that convention is gone.
Maybe that's why.
Yeah.
Okay, Doctor Who Club of Australia yearbook. The Doctor Who Club of Australia has announced the return of its Zorinza yearbook. Well, it doesn't really affect
Sorry,
us.
Sorry, Adam. I'll be back in a moment. Isla just needs me.
Oh, bless her. Work experience on Doctor Who. BBC Studios are offering 7-week training and development opportunity working on Doctor Who in Cardiff. The offer is aimed for those aiming to work in television drama, but who lack the knowledge to know how to achieve this. Full details are available at hannah.williams05@bbc.co.uk. They'll be flooding in with applications now. The Black Archive number 20, Face the Raven, the latest edition of the Black Archive series investigates the 12th Doctor story, Face the Raven. Don't know anything about that, but yeah. Class returns in audio for
Big
Finish.
I can talk about that for a second if you want me to.
No, thank you. Class returns in audio for Big Finish, Matthew. I never got to see Class.
I never have either, but the news dropped earlier this week that Big Finish is picking it up and running with it. Mm. Two box sets have been announced so far, including the return of Sophie Aldred to the role of Ace.
Yep, friend of the show, but didn't want to come to the Old Comic Con for political reasons. I think she might live to regret that decision. All right, 10th Doctor and Rose on vinyl in HMV. Yellow vinyl, according to the picture.
Yep, it's one of the Big Finish stories that was released last year, Infamy of the Zaros, if I remember correctly, is being reissued on vinyl, because that's something Big Finish does now, apparently.
It does indeed. And I'm going to... Will you stop making stupid noises back there? Right, so that was the dogs, everyone. Doctor Who magazine, issue 526, with the picture of Tom Baker and a Dalek on the front cover, can be purchased, like the segue here, from whowon.co.uk.
Is that whowon.co.uk?
Much quicker than by waiting to come into your shops. That's all I'm going to say on that score. So that's the Doctor Who magazine, issue 526. Really catching up with their numbers, you know. So that completes Doctor Who.
And you could probably buy issue 524 where Conquistadors gets mentioned.
Does
so.
It? Cool.
Yep. Well, there was a whole article about the Gallifrey One convention and in a section talking about other U.S. cons, Conquistadors got mentioned, which was very neat for us. And that issue is just now hitting the stands here in the United States.
There's another more reason, listeners, to go to whowon.co.uk and buy it. It is available.
Whowon.co.uk?
Oh, you're going to upset Kirby by saying that.
I said that.
I wasn't here. I was out of the room.
Oh, yeah, it's your excuse, is it? Right. Eighth Doctor Ravenous One is a Big Finish audio CD thing. It's £40. You can buy that now.
Box set.
Yeah, I know. Crossfire 3, Blake Seven story. DWM 525, the previous issue of, is also still available at whowon.co.uk, along with Men of War, which is a First Doctor resurrected story, and Doctor Who magazine special 49 in the studio. But things are coming soon, which is always the most exciting thing for me when it comes to Who One, is Aliens Among Us 3, a Torchwood set, along with Believe and The Churchill Years, which is a Big Finish thing. I don't know what relates to in regards to Doctor Who. Companion Chronicles Second Doctor Box Set 2. Again, they've resurrected good old Patrick Troughton. And Horrors of War, another Big Finish audio, featuring Third Doctor. Amazing.
That's BBC audio. It's a kind of sequel to the one you mentioned earlier with the First Doctor.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Just while you were on here to correct me. And Iron Bright. featuring the Sixth Doctor in the slightly new artwork that Big Finish are currently bringing out for these new productions. There's a Jago or Jago and Lightfoot 14. That's quite exciting for Jago and Lightfoot fans. And that's called Forever. And Lost Beacon, Torchwood story. And Lure of the Nomad, a Sixth Doctor story. And Morden Undead, the audio book.
Cool. And you can read my review of Lure of the Nomad over on futurism.media.
Now, when you said you can read my, I thought you can say lips. I was then going to say a bit difficult on audio presentation. Right, lavazi.co.uk. And now, I wouldn't honestly, the temperatures we're having at the moment in Great Britain, you wouldn't really want to wear a scarf, but, you know, some people wear them anyway, just for the sake of it. But if you want to get your stuff ready for the winter, get your iconic and best-looking Doctor Who scarves.
I'm going to be wearing mine next week in Alabama.
Is it warm in Alabama at the moment?
Just a little.
Well, that's a bit daft. It is a bit daft. But yeah, you can get all the paraphernalia relating to finer detail of, like, Matthew, where did you get your lovely question mark top from, just by matter of interest?
It wasn't Lavarzi. This was, I got mine about 3 or 4 years before Lavarzi got the license to do there.
So where should you get, if you wanted to buy one now? Yeah. I want to get one now.
Lavarzi.co.uk?
That's what we're looking for, yes. I did notice that if anybody from Great Britain is watching Britain's Got Talent, there was a comedian on there, really good comedian actually, whose sort of iconic thing is wearing a tank top. And there was while he was on the stage, there was a selection of tank tops beamed on the big screen behind him, and one of which was the Seventh Doctor's ? Tank top.
Cool.
I just wondered if anybody spotted that, you know. But yeah, all these items, plus normal fashion items, Sherlock, Star Trek, and stuff like that, can be bought from the lovely, wonderful Lavarzi.co.uk. In fact, you can actually, if you go into whowon.co.uk, they have got a couple of Lavarzi products in the store. So that's quite interesting in itself.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yes. So I was going to go back to the live feed. Right then, before we disappear. Where do we move on to? We got Laurie Nick said, has Adam got his sexy cosplay picked out for Comic-Con? No.
I have.
I'm there professionally, of course, although therefore I have to go in my professional capacity.
Not sexy.
Do I have to go in my professional capacity for both days? Can I cosplay for one?
No, you can do what you like, because you're not employed by APV services.
Well, it can be for the weekend if you'd rather.
No, we don't. You're there in podcasting capacity.
Fair enough.
But you're not employed by APV services, so therefore I have to go with my professional. Never mind, I'm moving on. Right then, Alan T. Butcher, Adam is going as Capaldi's hair. And Laurie Nick said, that's pretty sexy, old Laurie. And then Lillian Robin said, I wish I could go to the Isle of Wight Comic-Con, can't afford it. Well, do some sort of crowdfunding thing, Lillian, and come and see it. We've got a few months yet. Hasn't she, everybody? Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah.
I guess. Yes.
Okay, right. Next time, we're going to be looking at Face of Evil with friend of the show, Louise Jameson.
No.
What?
Next time, we're going to be live.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, in regards to want people to swat up and watch The Face of Evil before the next episode that contains the journey. Thank you, Mr. Bartlett Sloan. Kirby is, of course, right, as the next episode is the Conquistadors live link up, which is on the 10th of June. So if you want to, I think we have to do that slightly earlier, don't we, Matthew?
It's at the same time that we got through today, but it'll be for 90 minutes.
Oh, so we're doing it at 7 o'clock. Oh, cool. That sounds like fun.
So when are we doing this?
Time, if not,
same time next week, Kirby. I might have to start a bit earlier.
No. The Face of Evil.
Oh, Face of Evil is the following week. On Father's Day, the 17th of June.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, I just realized another piece of news. I can see it on my calendar right now. Is at least here in the States, there's going to be a Genesis of the Daleks screening in theaters.
Yeah, I'm really cross about that. They should do that here.
Yeah, we spoke about this last time.
They are doing it in the UK, but it's only happening at the BFI.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Close to
the Big Friends Institute, is it? Or
Big Finish Institute.
Oh, Big Finish Institute, yeah. Okay, so that's it. Everybody should swat up on lovely Louise Jameson's first story, The Face of Evil, in time for 2 weeks' time. But next week, if you want to listen in, to the Conquistadors live link up. If it all goes wrong, it's Matthew's fault. He's admitted it's actually had it down in writing. But of course, Matthew's also got the disclaimer that if it does all go wrong, it's actually Kirby's fault. So somewhere along the line, it's not really my fault or Andy's fault if Andy.
Thank you.
You know, happens to do. And
I think
Andy
we can all agree it will be Andy's fault.
I'll be drunk or stoned, of course.
I'll blim him out.
It's his fault.
So, until next week, God knows what's going to happen. Thank you for listening and watching the show. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Bye, y'all.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.
Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended. No copyright infringement intended. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production. Is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is the trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended. I did it! The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast is an APB Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast is an APVServices.co.uk production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast is sponsored by whowon.co.uk, lavazi.co.uk and audible.com. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast is an APV Services production sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast is an APV Services production sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.